Heartwarming Broadway show Annie takes center stage at the Paradise Community Theater, presents this beloved, award-winning musical. Annie runs April 13th through the 22nd. Spring and music will be in full swing on Saturday, April 28th, as Buddy Koopman's orchestra returns to the Paradise for a night of big band fun and swing music. For more information or for tickets, go to ParadiseCenterOfTheArts.org or call 507-332-7372 or visit the Paradise Center for the Arts box office in historic downtown Faribault.
Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I want to thank you for joining me for a place where you can wake up your imagination and hopefully be inspired to add some Art Zany to your life. You know, when I was thinking about preparing for the show, I could not help but mash together, so get ready, folks, the two performances that will feature on the show today. They are The King's New Clothes and Choral Country, and I also added a dash of Honor Project presentations because that's what's going on at my house for the kids. So here's what my wild imagination came up, and it threw in a little bit of Brady Bunch, so get ready for that as well. So I'm thinking about the episode of the Brady Bunch where Jan has an upcoming debate, and she is really nervous about speaking in front of a group, an audience of people. And so she gets advice from her dad, Mike, to just imagine them all in their underwear. She says, imagine the audience has no clothes. So I think if I ever had to sing on stage, that's the trick that I would have to do, because I would be really nervous if I had to do that. You know, and then it made me think, well, gosh, on Art Zany Radio, I have never thought about the audience. But maybe if I did, I would hope that you're relaxed, that you're open to your imagination, and you're ready to enjoy a favorite beverage as you listen to our stories. And we've got a big show for today. We're talking with students and Rachel Hyder from The King's New Clothes. That is a Purple Door project from the Northfield Arts Guild. We're going to preview their performances. And then next, following a quick break, we're going to talk with Richard Kvam. And I did it again. Kvam. He said I could say it any way I wanted, but I probably said it about 12 different ways. That happens to me. And I know if you listen, you know that the more I practice, the worse I get. So he is the artistic director and conductor of the Choral Arts Ensemble of Rochester. And we're going to preview their upcoming concert in Northfield. So let's begin with The King's New Clothes. It is by Kevin Holmstrom Bradshaw, and this is a Project Purple Door, and it is the retelling of the Hans Christian Andersen story, and we'll talk about the show in just a minute, but this does open up the weekend of Friday, April 27th for four performances, and you can get your tickets now on the Northfield Arts Guild website, so make sure that you do that. I have some excited students in the studio, so we're going to open up the mics and ask them to introduce themselves and maybe tell us a little advice that you would give to somebody who's going to give a presentation or sing on stage or talk in front of a group. So why don't we start down on the end? I'll have you say your name, maybe your grade, where you go to school. Oh, any other details you want to share, fun things about your theater life or your family life or things you are passionate about. And go ahead and we'll have our listeners learn a little bit about you.
I'm Rachel Wolf. I'm in the fifth grade, and I go to Prairie Creek Community School.
And tell me about what advice you might have for someone who is thinking about, you know, maybe they've got a presentation to give or a story to tell on stage or introduce somebody at an event.
I would say just be yourself and relax.
That is excellent advice, because that's really what you need to do. Thank you, Rachel. It's so good to have you. I think you've been on before. This is your first time. Well, I just feel like you're an old friend who's come to visit. So thank you for being here. And let's go ahead and swing the mic. Make sure you get real close there so we can hear you.
Hi, my name's Hazel Shuffleton, and I'm in second grade, and I also go to Prairie Creek Community School, and I've been doing readers, theaters, and school plays since kindergarten.
So you've done it for years. And so you would probably have some good advice. What do you think you would say to somebody who's thinking, or maybe they're feeling a little nerves about being on stage or being in front of a group?
I just don't really look at them. I just look out, like I don't look like up, but I look out and I look at the wall. I don't look at anybody, at, like their faces. Even if I mess up, I just look at the wall.
That's a pretty good advice, so that you don't actually think about the people. It's just about the wall. You're talking to the wall, right? No, I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes you less nervous to have to, and then you don't have to engage. That's a really good trick to you change your eye point. Thank you for sharing that, and welcome to the studio. Mm-hmm. And go ahead next.
My name is Joran Peterson. I am in fifth grade, and I also go to Prairie Creek Community School. I've been doing theater for a really long time, and I think it's just a really fun thing to do.
And how would you tell someone to get over some nerves if they're going in front of a group?
Well, plan something, and then practice it in front of an audience, and then when you practice it, like actually do the thing, then know that the audience is just going to be just as loving and caring as the audience that you practiced with.
Oh, that's a sweet and wonderful thing. So you start with maybe a smaller group, some friends or parents or family, and know that they're supporting you and can encourage you, and the same people. That is so true, because I know when I've been in the audience, I am rooting for everybody who's up there to have great success. Thank you for that.
Yep.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And Rachel is here. Welcome, Rachel, again.
Thank you so much for having us, Paula.
Yes, and you are directing this.
Yes.
And you are at the Northfield Arts Guild. I've lost track of your title there.
I'm the performing arts manager at the Northfield Arts Guild, and directing is kind of my side gig. And especially Purple Door Youth Theater of late. We just finished up Les Miserables and jumped right into The King's New Clothes.
Yes, and this, we should mention that this is Purple, or Project Purple Door. So this is another element of that.
That's right. It's sort of an extension of the Purple Door program. It started, we're doing it every other year. It started 2 years ago with our radio play. It was a radio play of You Can't Take It With You. And one of the aspects of the Project Purple Door is a tour. So we take it out into the community, bring it to people that might not be able to come to our theater, or just expose other people to theater. And so the first year we went to assisted living homes, and this year we are going to the YMCA, we're going to the public library, and we're going to Laura Baker Services.
And those are in addition to the theater performances.
That's correct.
So yes. It's going to do four performances on the stage at the theater,
right,
where you can get tickets. And then the other ones, are they?
The public library is open to anyone. The others are more private events.
For the organization. So mm-hmm. You guys get to go on tour. Not many people get to take their show on tour. That's pretty amazing.
It is.
A lot of nods here that they're very, a lot of energy and excitement about that. So, what is The Emperor's New Clothes? If your, a friend asks, what are you doing? What do you tell them about The Emperor's New Clothes and this particular production? Who wants to jump in and say, how about Joran?
Well, it's pretty much a story where this king gets, or emperor, in this case it's a king, gets tricked to give away lots of money for pretty much nothing.
Mm.
And then they get kind of, because they're all about clothes and fashion, and so they kind of get tricked into giving away lots of money for pretty much nothing.
So, and Rachel, tell us a little more about his clothes, or what the story is in this production about the emperor's clothes. Because that's kind of, people may remember the Hans Christian Andersen little mm-hmm. fable, and then this is a kind of a takeoff on that.
Well, he has a lot of different clothes, and he's always striving to get, like, new fancy clothes, and so he really wants to get these invisible clothes because they can only be seen by wise people, and so he thinks he's wise enough to see them. So
that's a great description. And so then this, tell us all, each of you, tell us about your role that you have and what you are contributing to this production. Why don't we start with Hazel, since the other two answered. Go ahead and swing that mic over.
So I'm Sybil, and I'm really the person who steps out. I'm the bravest person in the play, really.
I bet.
And I, like, jump out, and I'm like, the king is in his underwear. So I'm that person.
That must be a lot of fun to be able to say that. You were going to jump in. Go ahead.
I am King Clasian. I am the king, and I contribute by... Well, I think that if there wasn't really a king, then the story would be kind of hard to, like, there would be nobody to there. And also, yeah.
That's excellent. Rachel, your role.
I am Queen Myopia.
I love the name.
Well, Calasian and Myopia are both eye conditions.
Oh, I recognize myopia, but not...
Yes, and Calasian is sort of a swelling of the eyelid, so it's very carefully chosen names.
And what is the Queen Myopia?
So, basically, I'm always trying to convince King Calasian that his clothes look fine. And I have one part where basically it's just like, the people will love you. And they're just like, oh, wait, in that. Because the people love the king. Even if they don't, they have to act like it. And so
my job
is sort of convincing the king that...
That they do love him. Yeah, and so this sounds like a play for everybody, because we want to assure audiences that the king does have clothes, invisible clothes. And so anyone can come and see this.
Very much so. It's definitely for every age.
And that makes it an awful lot of fun. So how do you do this performance? Because this is a reading, so there's a limited use of set. And tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they see the performance.
No, it isn't a reading. We actually have it all memorized and everything. Oh. It's just a it's not crazy over the top. Beautiful sets and everything. It's very simple because we have to fit it all into my van, literally. So we'll be playing in three very different rooms when we go on tour as well. And in fact, coming up this week, there'll be a day where we are going to come to the Downtown Guild and practice there, just so that they get the sense of what it's like to not be on our stage. And we've had to really think about our blocking. How are we going to be able to do that in a room where there is no wing space, as we call it? There's no backstage area. So it's been challenging for the kids to think those things through. How do you perform in another space and yet make it just as exciting of a performance as it would be on a stage?
Yeah, and I heard Rachel say a couple words that I hadn't heard before.
Wing space.
Wing space. Okay. I think I know what that is, but maybe someone could help me out with that. Wing space, that might be something. Our listeners aren't familiar with that term. That sounds like a great theater term. Anyone want to jump in? It's they're thinking, because I told you there'd be a quiz, but... Rachel can go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it's basically the sides of backstage.
That's...
Yeah.
And
it's
so
not
that's,
backstage itself, but it's the blocked off part that's not on stage, but it's on the sides.
Is it kind of the pre-going on stage part, where you're not quite...
It's almost like a hallway.
A hallway that could... Yeah, exactly. And, of course, you guys are learning about blocking, which is... anyone want to fill us in about that?
It's like the actions that we're doing. Like, we're not only saying words and just standing in a space, we're also making it interesting by moving our bodies.
And so learning what those actions are so that you can predict and do those again each time that you perform?
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing thing. Yeah, that, and so it's so exciting to see the young folks interested in theater, and you have an enthusiastic group of 18, I said?
That's correct.
And are 18 people fitting in your van, Rachel?
No, parents, thank God for parents. They will be helping transport the kids.
Okay. I thought I had a vision of what was going to happen. And so we also wanted to talk because there was a little chatter ahead of time about the ending of this particular edition of The Emperor's New Clothes.
Well, it was fascinating to me because I talk about this in my director's notes, but you know, I'm a mother, I'm a parent, obviously a mother, a parent. But I'm a peacemaker. I love working with kids and I love kids' stories. And to me, The Emperor's New Clothes always had these wonderful, gentle, kind endings. Like, oh, the king changed his mind and everything worked out right. And that actually is not the way Hans Christian Andersen originally wrote the story.
I bet most people wouldn't know that.
They wouldn't know that. And our story ends the way that Hans Christian Andersen ended his story, which maybe I shouldn't give it away.
No, but we want to be
surprised. But I think that we need to look at the story as not necessarily about a stupid, egotistical ruler.
I'm giggling.
And more. we have our ruler standing here next to us.
And we know that's not true.
No, not at all. But that the story really applies to all of us, and that we're kind of missing the point if we just think it's about the king. It's more about, you know, have you ever pretended to like something that you didn't really like because you were afraid of what everybody else was going to say around you? Did you ever just go along with something because you wanted to kind of be cool? And even the fact that the king does act childlike, that's really, there's a little bit of that in all of us as well. So it is not a heavy message kind of play at all. It is silly, over the top. It's a very goofball kind of show. But the ending might surprise some people.
So that's a reason to go.
Yes.
This is The King's New Clothes. It is performed one weekend only for where you can get tickets. That's Friday, April 27th, starting at 7:30. And then there's a matinee on Saturday at 2, which is an unusual time for the Arts Guild Theater, which is exciting.
Yes, yes.
So family with children can, you know, come. They don't have to stay up late.
Right. And another thing about the Saturday is that we are offering pay what you're able tickets for that Saturday matinee. So anyone can come to the show. The tickets are only $6 for general seating. Everyone, adults, children, everybody is $6. But on that Saturday matinee, if $6 is too much for you, come anyway, give us a penny, give us nothing, give us $10, give us $20. Whatever makes you feel like you're able to pay that. That is the Saturday at 2 o'clock show. Oh. And we also are selling regular tickets for that performance. And we also are encouraging groups to come to the show. So if you have a group of 8 or more, tickets are only $5. And for every 10, you get a free chaperone ticket. And we already do have a Girl Scout troop coming. So it's really exciting.
That is. And then you'll have an additional performance on Saturday night at 7:30. Yes. And then another matinee on Sunday at 2.
Right. And doing a 2-show day is also a great learning for these kids. Because it's challenging because you sort of get the deja vu factor going on. Like, didn't I already say that? Oh, wait, where am I in the script? So it's really exciting. I'm really glad that we can have the kids involved in that.
And so northfieldartsguild.org is where the tickets are available. Let's hear from the kids about, well, why should people come and see this show? What are you excited to share with an audience about this show?
Well, we've put a lot of time and work into this, and I think that I think it's going to be fun to, like, show it off and fun to kind of tell a story. Yeah.
That is a great reason. Hazel, what would you tell our listeners?
I'd say it's really, really funny.
That's good.
What Jordan said, we've put a lot of time in this, and we really hope that people will come.
That's an excellent invitation. What's some favorite part that you want to share, Rachel, with our listeners?
I just think it sends a really good message. And, again, it's funny, and we've put a lot of time into it.
I think it's going to be a brilliant show, and it's always fun to see the energy and the humor, and this is a show for all audiences, and that is an important thing, too, to have those experiences for everyone in the family. So thank you for sharing your story of the King's New Clothes. It's been a thrill to have Rachel Wolf in the studio, Hazel Shuffleton, Joran Peterson, and Rachel Heider from the Northfield Arts Guild Project Purple Door production of the King's New Clothes.
Thank you so much, Paula.
Oh, you're very welcome. Folks, we are just getting started on Art Zany Radio, because next we're going to hear from Rick Quam. He said, just let the V roll off. So I'm trying a couple different things. But first, we're going to jump with some music. This is something from the Rochester Choral Arts Ensemble, and this is called Gloria by Dominic Argento. So we're going to go ahead and play that on while we switch out the studio, and we'll be right back on Art Zany Radio. All right. That was pretty spectacular. I just couldn't stop in the middle of that. That was the Choral Arts Ensemble of Rochester, and that was Gloria by Dominic Argento. We are going to talk about Choir Country. The Northfield Arts Guild is going to host the Choral Arts Ensemble of Rochester for a Choir Country concert. Choir Country is a celebration of Minnesota's finest composers, and which has Minnesota has an amazing deep roots of exceptional choral singing for the country. It's extraordinary, and so it'll be exciting to see that on display. You can get information. Their performance is Sunday, May 6th at 3 p.m. at St. John's Hall. Tickets are available at northfieldartsguild.org or at the choralartsensemble.org as well. I hope I have that website correct for you. I think I might have. You can check our website, kymnradio.net. I will post this on in just a little bit. So I did an interview with Rick Kalman. I'm so nervous about his name, Rick Kvam, and we're going to go ahead and play that, and he talks a little bit more about this piece within the interview. So enjoy. Welcome to Art Zany Radio. It's such a thrill. I'm excited to have you come to Northfield and to bring this great choral ensemble to our community. I think I want to start by asking a little bit about your own singing and how you got connected to being a part of choir and singing in a choir.
Well, Paula, I grew up Lutheran, so you couldn't really avoid singing. it's just kind of part of the landscape. My dad was a choir director, church choir director, and actually my mom was my first choir director because she did the little kiddie choir at church. And, you know, we just sang This Little Light of Mine or I don't know what, that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And so it was just part of the culture, it's part of the landscape. And then I certainly sang all the way through high school. Had a really great program, some Luther grad, I believe, or it might have been a St. Olaf grad, had a wonderful program in Sioux City, Iowa. And we did band and orchestra, too, back then at the same time. You could do all of them. And then in college I sang, and I was a music major and got in a men's group and a mixed group, and then I was, you know, totally hooked.
And you know, I think that I was thinking about as I was preparing for this that, you know, they talk about lifelong sports, and I kind of think that choir might fall into that category as well too. That it's something that you can begin at any age, but it's something certainly that you can sing for many years. It can be something that you pursue and continue.
Yeah, I think the voice does have age-related kind of issues eventually, but you can really sing for decades and decades and at a very high level and with a lot of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the added socialization benefits of being in a choir. It's a team sport, and choir people are fun people, and they get along, and they cooperate, and they're, you know, it's really a nice little pocket of the world to be ensconced in every week in a rehearsal or performance. Yeah.
Well, I've heard people talk about the idea that there's a benefit to singing, and especially a benefit to singing in a group. Is that something that you found through your experiences, or had people tell you about their involvement in being in choir?
I think that's right. Both just physically. I mean, it's somewhat demanding. You have to take deep inspirations, hold it. You know, you do a lot of core strengthening to kind of really sing appropriately. A lot of good posture work. And so just sheerly physically, it's a nice workout, especially when you're going for hours and singing appropriately. And then it's just psychologically a wonderful workout, too. I mean, you're creating together something beautiful. All these people that the physical therapist and the dentist and the, I don't know what, the social worker and the medical student are all coming together and from their disparate lives and together unifying to make something that they all love. And it's a great little microcosm of what community ideally should be.
absolutely. That is, I think, something that makes it wonderful. And I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about the Choral Arts Ensemble. You'll be coming up from Rochester, and so a lot of folks in our community maybe haven't heard this group. And so how would you describe your choral ensemble and tell us about the, you know, part of the programming that will be in this beautiful choir country concert?
Well, some people might think it's bringing Coles to Newcastle to bring a choir to Northfield, but the Choral Arts Ensemble was a wonderful group of 47 adult singers, and we've been around since 1985, and we do music from the Renaissance to the present day. We're very proud of having commissioned over 50 new works for choir, and we will perform with orchestra. We're going to sing with the Minnesota Bach Society next year, and we sung with St. Paul Chamber and other groups. And the group's members are skilled choral conductor, choral singers. They've most of them been in their college choirs. Some are high school or choir directors or church choir directors. So they function at a high level, and then, we only rehearse once a week, so they have to be quick studies to get to the level we'd like to get to. This performance that we're bringing to Northfield is very exciting for us. It's a concert of all Minnesota composers, and it's called Choir Country. And indeed, you know, around the whole U.S., if you tell people you're from Minnesota, they say, oh, that's choir country. You know, they realize that there are many wonderful, great choirs and choir traditions that are based in Minnesota. And they're also, in parallel, lots of great choral composers. And we're going to feature some of those composers on this concert. And I picked 13, but you could easily pick two more concerts of 13 different composers, because they're pretty thick on the ground around here, and they're so good.
Well, and I have to ask you, you know, because I am curious, I've heard that as well about Minnesota being such a choir rich environment. What do you think that's attributable to? Because, you know, singing isn't something that's special to people from the North or the Midwest or any of that.
Right. Well, I think the two big strands are the Lutheran choir tradition, F. Melius, starting the St. Olaf Choir in 1912 and bringing that level of excellence and musicality and spreading it around the whole region is just very important. And the St. Olaf sound and the Luther sound and the Concordia sound and the Gustava sound is famous all around the country and beyond. And so that sort of tradition, which is based on, I think, kind of a Protestant, we're going to sing a lot during the service mentality. I mean, Lutherans, they're pretty dangerous sight readers. They sing a lot of hymns and a lot of Bach chorales. And you have to have some savoir-faire to get through those. And so they're good choral singers just from the get-go. And so that's one strand. The other really wonderful strand is the University of Minnesota started with Dominic Argento arriving here in 1961 or so. And he was a hotshot composer from the East Coast and thought maybe this would be a little way stop for a couple of years before he goes back east, is what he, you know, likes to say. But then he realized he had landed in a great spot, and he started collaborating with Tyrone Guthrie and Philip Brunel, and started the Minnesota Opera. And he had a fertile field that he landed in, and he created this whole generation and subsequent generations of wonderful composers, Stephen Paulus and Libby Larson and Carol Barnett. They started the Minnesota Composers Forum, and that turned into the American Composers Forum. And that had a huge impact of encouragement and, again, dissemination of this kind of choral tradition. And so the two strands, I think, are both unique to Minnesota and have had a nationwide impact.
I think you're right when you talk about that, those things coming together at that time. And I think people recognize the singing part, but I think what will be interesting about this concert, which is Choir Country, and I want to remind our listeners that this is Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination, and I'm talking with Rick Kvam. Oh, I said it wrong now. I was trying so hard not to make that V, and then there it went. Just
I respond when it's KVAM. You respond to anything, Kvam, okay. Or Kram or Wham, Kwan, but it's Kvam. Yeah.
Kvam. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very generous of you.
Yeah.
And he is the artistic director and conductor of the Choral Arts Ensemble out of Rochester. That's coming up to Northfield on Sunday, May 6th. That concert is at 3 p.m. at St. John's Hall. Very easy to find, 500 3rd Street West, just across the railroad tracks from our station here. And the concert is Choir Country, because you mentioned so many of the great choir traditions here. But this concert will feature works by Minnesota composers.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the pieces. We played in the opening a bit of the Gloria.
And right, that's Dominic Argento, and he wrote that for the Mask of Angels, a little operetta that he wrote to launch what turned into a Minnesota opera. I think it was Twin Cities Opera or Minneapolis Opera at that point. It was done at the Guthrie in the early 60s.
Mm.
And just a wonderful piece, beautifully constructed with a fugue and an inversion of the theme. And yet at the same time, you don't need to know any of that. It's just you hear the joy and the exaltation of that music is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that's exciting about this concert is that we have traveled around the state to talk and video 7 of these composers.
Oh.
We took Steve Starick in tow, and he interviewed them, and we had a videographer, and we had lovely, interesting times talking to, among others, Dominic Argento, about their piece, about their life, about their musical philosophy or formative experiences, just anything that popped up. And so we'll have a little 4-minute talking program note by Dominic right before we sing his Gloria. And it was wonderful to talk to him about that. He's a very articulate guy, even though he's 91 now.
Oh, wow, what a treat that was then. And how important to get his words, videotaped and recorded. And
absolutely.
So he can, his ideas, I think that's always fascinating to hear from a composer about their, you know, what they were thinking or what was on their mind. Because yeah. Now he would have, what year would he have composed this piece?
I think it's 62 or 63, very early when he was here. All the composers are very interesting about their process. But Dominic was especially articulate about finding some little place inside himself where he could really capture the emotion or the transcendent nub that he wanted to express, and then without any artifice or pretension or kind of fancying up or calculation, to just bring that out of himself and put it into sound. As I thought, it was a very beautiful, he said it better, but it's a very beautiful kind of image of what he's trying to do as a composer, a completely non-technical image.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just absolutely a privilege to listen to him talk. Yeah.
And did you perform it for him?
Well, we didn't write then and there. We've sent him copies of that performance from the past. I just went up with Steve, so we didn't have the choir in tow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would imagine that might be a little nerve-wracking, is it, to have someone who's written a piece then? I suppose since you've commissioned so many works, that's probably been the case, that you've performed for the person who...
Yes. Yeah, well, it is sort of nerve-wracking, at least to me. Composers tend to be just overjoyed all the time, and I don't think they're good actors. Maybe they are. But I think that, you know, I would worry that they have this perfect image in their head of what their dream was for the sound. And in this world, there's always a compromise, and maybe the altos go astray, or the basses were, you know, who knows what, or the balance of the chord is not quite right, or something. You know, there's got to be a some little besmirchment somewhere, and for them to not really react to that, or maybe not even notice it hardly, I don't know. We just did a piece by Jeffrey Van in March, and there's really nowhere to hide on this a cappella piece. I mean, it's very clean and transparent, and I think we sang it beautifully, but still, you always wonder if he had something else in mind, or a little more crescendo here, or a little more piano there. If he did, he didn't let on. But I find it nerve-wracking.
I can imagine. And so then let's talk a little about, so as a choir, you're presented with a piece, and then it's interesting to think now you have, I forget, was it 47 members?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so each one of those 47 members may look, because at the note or at the series of notes, and maybe having some idea in their mind what they think it should sound like, or what they, you know, and of course these are very trained voices, so they're probably really extraordinary at being able to get it right. But how, as a group, do you rehearse these pieces? What is your practice for putting it together?
Well, we have various rehearsal techniques depending on the piece and the time we have available, but ideally it starts with, you know, me picking the piece and really doing a lot of score study and trying to figure out exactly what the composer had as an image in, and I need to get that image in my head exactly what the sound should be so that we can figure out how to get there. I think that's very important and pretty difficult. Fortunately, some of these guys and gals are just, they're around, and you can just call them up or you can email them and say, now, what did you mean about this? Or should this consonant be here? Is the breath should be here? It's very helpful to figure out. I just emailed David Moore is doing one of his pieces, Old Waters. He wrote four choral arts ensemble, and he has some syllables, a ting and a tung. T-U-N-G, it's ambiguous about what vowel did he really mean there, but he wants a uh.
Okay.
Not a ooh or a but a tung. And again, he has a very specific sound in mind. And unfortunately, if it was Kenneth Jennings' piece, I can't ask him. He's gone now. You have to just make your best guess. Or Bach, or, you know, one of the others who passed beyond, but there are a lot of composers who are still plying their trade right now, and you can interact with them, and that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. I hadn't, when you gave that example of the word, it, you know, I think about that a lot in terms of saying words out loud, especially as I'm doing on the radio, which is why this is Art Zany, because I often I do my best, but sometimes I goof it up, and so I can chuckle at that. But you know, when you have something where you have everybody, you need everybody to be on the same page. When you have multiple voices doing the same thing,
and that is difficult, and that's part of the joy of choir is people are absolutely willing to subsume their own kind of individual agenda to the group.
Mm.
You know, it's just such a nice kind of little model for the world. You know, you can kind of get along and play well with others, and it is difficult we try to get just notes and rhythms as quickly as possible and then start really shaping them. That's just the very first level. That's just like memorizing your lines for a play. You know, it doesn't really do anything except give you the building blocks, and if we can get the notes and rhythms really clean, then we can start making articulation choices and phrasing choices and, you know, kind of colors and balance decisions that really make the piece come alive.
Mm-hmm. No, right. Yeah, and that's part of the layering. And I think when you're at church and you're singing, you don't have the rehearsal. So you just, whatever note comes out or, you know, however it comes.
That's right. It's just
that's what it is. But if you're in the choir, then you are wanting to, you know, hear everybody and, you know, have your part be match or if, you know, depending on where you are. So I find that fascinating to bring those voices together and to, you know, and I would suspect that you as the choir director in front of everybody can hear more of the groups than everybody, the whole sound, I guess, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and that's and again, that's another way that the choir singers are so gracious, because they're willing to just be led. They have to trust the director's opinion, because they can't really verify it.
Mm.
Is it in balance or is it not? They can't tell because they're in the middle of the sound. We sometimes will sing mixed, which most of the singers really love because then they can hear a better representation of the entire sound.
Mm-hmm.
But there's issues with that as far as just getting a real section unison because now they're spread all over the choir. And so there are pluses and minuses to that. But it is true that they have to kind of just go with the flow and trust what I'm trying to tell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there is something of that energy that's created. It's the same thing that happens in the theater, you know, the same thing that happens for an orchestra concert, that live energy, not only for the performers on, you know, in front, but I think everybody in the audience, which is why I think it's so exciting that you're coming and people can actually enjoy the experience in a setting where they get to, you know, feel that and be a part of that experience.
Absolutely. And we always try to make our choirs and concerts an experience because, you know, you can dial up a pretty good version of the Rachmaninoff Vespers anytime on your iPod and hear a great sound. But there's something about a live performance with real breathing humans right there. And we try to also just take advantage of the gathering to try to enhance the experience by things like having Steve Starrick there, who's a wonderfully articulate and broadly experienced musician. He's a violist. He plays with Bach Society sometimes and Lyra sometimes. And he plays as he's a great tenor. He sang on the Dale Warland Singers. He certainly has rubbed shoulders with all sorts of different musicians over the decades. So he's really fun to just listen to. And then having all these composers chatting to us through the magic of video, I think it's just really fun to see the creative personality and then hear what they came up with in sound.
Mm-hmm. And so we should talk a little about the program and what is included in this concert, which again is the Rochester Choral Arts Ensemble. That's Sunday, May 6th at 3 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church. A beautiful space for having a concert. And it'll be a lovely thing in the afternoon to do. So tell us what else is on the program.
Well, we're doing some, kind of war horsey classic composers. F. Mealyus is going to be represented with Praise to the Lord. Kenneth Jennings, The Call. So we got a little St. Olaf contingent there. And then Stephen Paulus, Pilgrim's Hymn, and a Libby Larson tune, She's Like a Swallow. So that's sort of that older generation, and Dominic Argento.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple new ones. We got a piece by Jake Runnestad called My Song. It was written for Choral Arts Ensemble. And Jake's just a force these days. He's in demand. In fact, he's at Carnegie Hall today, I think, in residence through the weekend as the featured composer. And I think Anton Armstrong is conducting a festival choir of Jake's music.
How exciting.
Jake, it's very exciting. And Jake's, after that, I think he goes to Portland to work with a choir in residence, and the University of Washington to work with a choir, and then UW-La Crosse, and then Chicago. I mean, he's around, and he's doing stuff.
And so that might be a new choir composer that people are just going to hear more about.
And he is a young guy. I bet he's just in his early 30s, and he is kind of a grandchild, maybe, of Dominic. I mean, Dominic taught Libby Larson, and Libby Larson was a mentor for Jake, among others. I mean, Jake had a variety of different teachers, but it's fun to see the ripple effect of some of these composers and how they have inspired and encouraged a whole new generation, and just taking off. Another of the younger composers is Tim Takash, who was in Cantus. We're doing a piece by him, A Worshipper and a Man, Stephen Crane text, and he wrote that also specifically for Choral Arts Ensemble. So we're delighted about that. We're doing Burr Oaks by Craig Carnahan. He worked for American Composers Forum for years, and he studied with Dominic.
And that's a piece we're going to play just a bit of as we roll out of the show.
That's right, the Burr Oaks. And that's a lovely tune. That is also written for choral arts. One of our tenors, lost his father, who had been an ag agent in Iowa and loved all growing things, even weeds. You know, Weeds of Nebraska was one of his favorite books, but he loved trees. And they found this text about bur oaks that seemed so appropriate, and it really resonated with Craig, because Craig is from the prairie. He's from Tripp, South Dakota, and he understood about these bur oaks and how majestic they were, mentions that they are of the prairie. And so he wrote a wonderful piece that was just a perfect tribute to this Zeebach guy who was an ag agent and how he loved trees. So, and we talked to Craig about that. And we're doing a piece by J. David Moore, Old Waters. That's the other one that's written for Choral Arts Ensemble. And I think that was part of a project to for the 150th anniversary of Minnesota, sesquicentennial. Had composers all over the state writing pieces for choirs. And J. David was writing one for Choral Arts Ensemble.
What a full program, and what an absolute wonderful thing to be able to bring that to our community. So we thank you for including Northfield on your tour. And I want to remind folks, I just forgot that they can go to the choralartsensemble.org for tickets, but you can also go to northfieldartsguild.org to get your tickets as well, because they're promoting this event, and so that's a possibility, and so that's an easy way, or you can probably stop into their offices to get that. Tickets are $15 for adults and $10 for seniors and students. So a wonderful afternoon of music on a Sunday in May. It'll be a thrill.
Yes, we'd love to see all those Northfield folks there, because it's going to be a fun program.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining me today. Thank you, Rick.
Absolutely, Paula. It's my pleasure.
And we're back, folks. We're running a little long, so we're not going to be able to play a bit from that Burr Oaks selection, but I hope you'll go to the concert and you'll be able to hear that as well. We are just got a couple seconds here to let you know that my guest from last week, Women March on Washington, opens this weekend. It's only two performances, Saturday and Sunday, so you can check out northfieldartsguild.org for all those details. As well, Dorothea Hroswitz sent me this information. I want to be sure to pass this on to you. Native American activist and musician Mitch Walking Elk and his St. Paul High School students are coming to Northfield for a musical performance and to speak about their upcoming meeting with the Vatican. I said that. The Vatican in Rome. That's in May 2018. They're going to have a performance followed by a discussion, and they'll be traveling to the Vatican in protest of the Doctrine of Discovery, which provides legal foundation for the mistreatment of Native Americans and other indigenous peoples worldwide. So your attendance at that event supports their trip. That is Thursday, April 19th at 7 p.m. at Carlton's White's Center Cinema. Again, Thursday, April 19th at 7. So I hope you will join them next week for that. You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks for listening. I hope you add some Art Zany to your life. And in the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.